It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
And now, the Golf News Network proudly presents the Jay's Blaze Show with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring in Galaxy of the Golf Sports World's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay.
All right, thank you, DJ Q. Once again, the best announcer in the radio business. He is absolutely correct. I am Jay Flava, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. When it says JB's, it's the best. It's the spiciest, richest, most boldly flavored spicy hot sauce you've ever had. But try it on wings, try it on pizza, try it on fingertips. JB's Best. All right, everybody, we had a great first half of the show. Thank you to Bill Love and Will Hutton of Olympic Club and of Bill Love's architectural company that are working on the Olympic Club to bring it into shape for the future U.S. Women's Open. We're going to move to the other coast right now for two more great stories. Joining us today are one of the great golf magnates of the world, a man responsible for bringing back to golden age perfection a couple of wonderful golf courses, and the golf course architect he employs to make that happen. Let's give a warm Jay's Plays welcome to Chris Schiavone and Stephen Kay. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thanks for having
Morning, Jay.
Well, if that's not an energetic good morning, Jay. Have you had your morning coffee, Stephen?
No, I'm not a coffee drinker, but I could have had some.
How about you, Chris? Welcome to the show.
Jay, there's no more enthusiastic supporter of golf in its history than you. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Well, it's really you that we should be thanking because you're responsible for bringing back two of the East Coast great golden age classics, one of which, Sacramento Country Club in northern New Jersey, will celebrate its 100th anniversary this year, and the other of which, Forest Gate Country Club in mid-New Jersey, halfway between Philly and New York, which is the last great American golf course of the greatest bloodline in architectural history, Charles Blair McDonald, Seth Rayner, and Charles Steam Shovel Banks. So the world is eternally grateful for the two of you because it was he that has done such fantastic work in restoring and renovating in a couple of places. So tell us a little bit about each one of them. Let's start with Sacramento, 100 years young. That's actually one of the earliest golf courses of A.W. Tillinghast, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. 1916, 100th anniversary, and one of the only island greens he ever designed, and certainly one of the only island green par fours in the area.
And maybe one of the first island greens done in the United States. I don't know that anybody's really sure of that.
When you do go that far back in history, it gets a little murky because records are tough. But yes, historians are on trying to figure out exactly how rare and how early that island green is. Let's tell everybody a little bit about, in particular, the routing of Sacramento and what this island green par 4, which is now the 18th hole, looks like. So, Stephen, why don't you go first?
Well, the 18 hole, as you said, is an island green right now. When I had done a master plan back several years ago, and then when Chris took over, we started doing work there again, started researching the course again. To be honest, they're not 100% sure when what hole Max Stilling has designed it as. Did he design it as 18? Did he design it as 9? Because from my recollection of some of the history is the oldest scorecard they could find was when the golf course was 5 years old, not 1 year old. So it could have changed a little bit. But I know this, that most of the members for many years were playing it as the 9th hole. However, they used to have a golf tournament, Chris, I think it was it in the 60s or the 70s? It was sort of an occasional PGA Tour stop. It's called the Cadillac Open or something like that. And they did switch holes around, and they played the 9th hole as 18, which is how Chris and I have it now.
Now, it also, at times in its history, played at the 12th hole because several holes come back to the clubhouse, not just 9 and 18. So the course has been resequenced a number of times over its history. And along with that, there was an interesting little bit of sequencing that you did, turning a certain par 4 into a now historic par 3, a reef hole, one of Tillinghast's favorites. So tell us a little bit about how, when you first got the golf course, you decided to have it evolve into the routing it has right now.
Chris, why don't you go first?
Sure. You know, there are 5 or 6 very reasonable ways to route that golf course where you end up with the 9 and 18 coming back to the clubhouse. It's just conducive to a number of different options there. When we took over the club, what's now 9 was 18, and what's now 18 was 9. But I'll tell you, the reason that I opted to change those was not because of the 18th hole being an island green and finishing on a dramatic note. As nice as that is, it also has the downside of a lot of people end up in the water on 18, so the last experience they have is usually something not as fun as, you know, when you play the 9th hole, which is relatively easy. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, I like my customers to end on a positive note whenever possible. So, you know, that was a little bit of a trade-off there. But the 9th hole ends right near the clubhouse, and the 18th hole is, you know, it's a little further away, but still close. But the 9th hole was so close to the clubhouse that I felt, hey, I'd rather have people near the halfway house on the turn than at the end of the round. So it was really more about the logistics there than about whether I wanted the 18th finishing hole to be dramatic.
Now, to describe the hole in more detail, it's a short par 4 that is uphill and also doglegs to the left. But the terrain is rather severe. The hills that sort of, it sort of rolls off into deep hills if you miss the fairway. And if you don't hit a good tee shot, you may be trying to make a blind shot to that island green. Or worse still, you may be behind some trees, so you actually have to lay up. Give us a little more architectural detail about the hole and what's the optimum way to play it.
Well, Jay, I'll answer that. I wouldn't describe it as a short par 4. I would describe it as a medium length par 4. It may be short for the guys who get hit at 300 yards, but for the guys who hit it from, you know, 180 up to 250, I would call it more medium. But you're 100% correct, Jay. If you don't hit your driver far enough, then you only see the flag stick. You don't see the putting surface, and you're hitting a blind shot to a green that's surrounded by water, and it is nerve-wracking. I mean, it's just crazy how it drives you nuts. Now, by the way, let me go back a little bit. In the early 1950s, some members on their own, you know, not knowing much about architecture, had planted some trees. And when I was proposing to take those trees down and bring it back to what Tillinghast originally had, their argument was, oh, you're going to make the hole easier. But as I and the golf pro who was there at the time and a couple of the members said, you know, you're actually going to make the hole easier by cutting the trees down, because the trees are forcing people to just lay up, you know, lay up and then have a little wedge to the green. Now, when you take the trees down, now you're going to, if you're 170, even 180 yards, you might be tempted to go to the green, with water surrounding it, so it actually made the hole tougher by taking the trees out. Trees always make holes easier. Lots of times you take trees out and make it a little harder because now people are tempted to try to hit a further, more accurate golf shot. The hole, when it was originally designed by Tillinghast, you got to realize it wasn't irrigated fairway. So in the summertime, they got a lot of roll on it, and they probably maybe got to the point where maybe they saw the green. But it's a great hole because of that. A half-season player, a 10 handicapper, he plays there all year. He's going to have a few birdies. He's going to have a fair amount of pars. He's going to have a fair amount of bogeys. And unfortunately, he's going to have a fair amount of double bogeys, too. It is a very interesting, unique golf ball that Tillinghast designed.
Now, you said two very interesting things. When I visited Shaka Maxim and played it, it was just after Chris had purchased the property, and you hadn't quite started to do work on it. So I saw much of the primordial Tillinghast that still existed there. For me, it was a 5-wood off the tee and a mid-short iron into the green, although I missed the fairway and I had to lay up. But you also said the key word, the key to great golf course architecture, design, strategy, and excitement. Temptation. Taking down those trees gave everybody a chance to try and hit driver, maybe to drive it. So there's so many more options.
So I think that's 100% right. By the way, I think it's about, 380 yards, I think, from the back tee. So I think medium length is definitely the right description for it. There's also bunkers on both sides of the fairway. So, you know, for a hole that length, it's about as hard as it gets. You know, and that you really pay the price for an errant shot because, you know, the smart thing to do then is to lay up and not try to go for an island green from a bunker or from a heavy rough or from behind a tree.
Now, Chris, I remember when I did visit and I took an informal, you know, not Quinnipiac and not Zogby-esque type of poll, but an informal poll of some members. I got mixed reviews between people saying they wanted it as 18 because it was a dramatic finish. Other people said no way they didn't want to finish on that hole as 18 because it was so difficult. Now that 2 years have passed and Stevens had a chance to do his work on it, what is the general consensus that it's the finishing hole right now? Has it been as well received as you'd hoped?
No, I think it's working out really well as the 18th. And as I say, the only trade-off is, you know, it's tough for some people as a finishing hole. But it is memorable, and I think that really makes it worthwhile as the 18th. And I just think the routing is more convenient for the membership the way it is now, too. You know, funny, almost tragic, but funny story about that 18th green, that island green. It really is an island such that once you're off the edge of the green, there's only a couple of feet before you get to the wall. And one day my superintendent was mowing the green himself early in the morning and didn't pay enough attention, made the turn a little too wide, and he and the triplex greens mower went over and into the water. And
actually,
it actually pinged his leg at the bottom of the pond. And the reason it was almost tragic, he barely was able to get his head above water to breathe because he was pinned. And for about 20 minutes until someone else on the maintenance crew.
Thank God he was okay.
Yeah, we can laugh about it now, okay.
But that's terrible.
But the funny part of the story is...
Yeah, they weren't laughing then, but we're laughing now. You are correct.
Well, I haven't even gotten to the... That isn't even the funny part of the story. The funny part of the story is there are a lot of snapping turtles in that pond. And so he spent the entire 20 minutes with his hands between his legs, worried about the most important part of his anatomy that he didn't know.
Oh. Oh, my goodness. So how long did it take you to get him out of that predicament?
Well, once they found him, this was early in the morning. It was like 6:15 in the morning that he
took that dive with the tripod.
Oh, no.
And, you know, they find him, say, 20 minutes later. They take a few minutes to get him out, and then they, you know, they took him to the hospital. He was okay, thank goodness. But, you know, you got to be careful when you're mowing an island green that is close to the edge of the water.
Did the turtles bite him?
No, I don't think they found him in time. He got out before they.
He must have not tasted very good.
Yeah, no, but there are some big snapping turtles in that pond.
So the course was designed by A.W. Taliesin, even though it's one of his very earliest. What holds there are the kind of thing that you would typically associate with Tillinghast architectural principles. And what are some of the typical things that Tillinghast would do over and over again that just were indelibly his?
Well, as the architect, and I've done a fair amount of work on a fair amount of Tillinghast golf courses, Tillinghast was obviously very much into strategic golf, risk and reward, but how he tended to do the risk was not just putting, you know, say, a bunker on the left-hand side of the fairway and a green bunker on the right-hand side, but he would actually take that fairway bunker and make a diagonal out of it. So you're biting off as much as you can do if you're trying to hit over that bunker. And you could see that on, I think, the sixth hole. You could see that on, oh, no, I'm sorry, the seventh hole you see that on. You see it on several holes where the fairway bunkers are slightly at a diagonal, and that the greens are slightly at a diagonal. So almost Rattan-like in the fact that the greens have a slight little tilt to it. The other thing that's a feature of the golf course is the greens are very much Tillinghast greens that contour very much like Tillinghast. Tillinghast tended to do greens that had general contours, nothing crazy. So you could get green speeds at good speeds today, compared to some other architects that did steeper greens, Donald Ross did steeper greens, Tillinghast did softer greens. And then he'd always throw in three or four greens that would have a lot more contours. At this golf course, one of the greens that has a lot more contours is now being played as the ninth green, used to be number 18. And he also varied the size of greens. He might have a green of 5,000 square feet, might have another green of 3,000 square feet. So the greens varied in size, which you see at Shackham Axon.
You know, it's a very interesting point you raised, because I cannot think of another golf course architect, not even Ross, not even McKenzie, who had such a broad palette and had such grand variety of everything he did. Of all the architects, I think Tilly's the toughest one to pin down, where if you drop somebody onto a random hole, I'm not saying 18 at Wingfoot or 18 at Baltusrol, but you know, a random hole, he might be the toughest one to pick out to say, wait a minute, that's a Tillinghast? Is that possible?
So you're absolutely right, Jay. When I did the Architect Golf Club, back up here talking about the golf club, but the Architect Golf Club is sort of the museum of architecture. When I was doing that, Tillinghast was the hardest architect to try to demonstrate what he did, because he changed so much in his career. He had tremendous variety, and his style kept changing.
How did he change over time? What was the progression in terms of styles and strategies?
Well, he started two things. He started making bigger bunkers. Bunkers started to get larger. Look at Best Case Black, which is probably the last golf course he was involved in. Enormous sand bunkers. So being enormous, they were even tilted at more angles. That's basically how he changed. He changed his bunkers. That's his style change. His bunkers in the beginning of his career were a little bit simpler, a little bit smaller, and a little bit more grassed down. As he went on further in his career, his bunkers got a little bit, they got fairly larger, they got more ornate. If you look at San Francisco Golf Club, if you look at other golf courses he did later in his career, the bunkers had, at Wingfoot, he started to put the big tongues and fingers of grass in the bunkers, which was for several reasons. They would, to help a golfer walk out of the very deep bunkers. It also made the bunkers more challenging, because you could have a more awkward lie in bunkers that had the tongue in it rather than a bigger, more of a circle area in the center. So he started making his golf courses more challenging, And he started making his bunkers more aesthetic looking by making them bigger, and he started flashing sand more.
Now, Chris, tell us a little bit about what it was about Shackamaxon that made you want to purchase it and run.
Well, there are so few A.W. Tillinghast golf courses that are actually owned by a company to run as a business, run for profit. Most of them are owned by the membership, or in the case of a Best Day, they're owned by the government. And the location is fantastic. The circumstances were such that if 10 years ago, Jay, you had said to me, you know, Shackamaxon was going to be available, I would have said that's impossible. It's owned by the members. They're well-heeled. It's an affluent area. You know, it says something about the state of the golf industry to some extent in terms of economics in recent years. But when the opportunity presented itself, you know, we were all over it because, you know, to own a Tillinghast golf course, to have it in that location, and to know that we, you know, felt strongly we could turn it around, you know, it just all came together really great for us. And frankly, it's something I'd like to continue to hold for a long time to come, because there just aren't too many golf courses of that quality that become available.
Very quickly, because we're going to go to break, Chris, tell us all about what other courses that you're working with in terms of either owning or operating, and Stephen, tell us what architectural projects you're working on right now.
Well, Chris, real quick, obviously, there's Fortgate Country Club, which I guess we're going to talk about, and we actually manage a course out on Long Island, Tallgrass, which was designed by Gil Hance, who is the architect that's doing the, or has done the Olympic course down in Rio de Janeiro for the Olympics this year. We've owned, you know, any number of courses over the years, bought and sold them in Florida and New Jersey and other places. But right now, you know, we're focused on Shackamaxon and Forest Gate Country Club.
We're getting very close to finishing two projects, a major renovation of a club in Philadelphia, which used to be called Torsdale Frankfurt. It is now called the Union League at Torsdale. There was a merger of the club with the Union League, which is an urban free club, the oldest in the United States, started during the Civil War to support the Union troops. And it's actually rated the number one city club in the United States. They merged with it so that they now also own a golf course, an old, great old Donald Ross golf course. We're just finishing that up, and we're finishing up a Tom Benelow golf course called East Orange Golf Course, which is a municipal, which is owned by the city of East Orange, although it's not actually in East Orange. It's a couple of towns away in Milburn, and we're just finishing that project up. I want to say one thing about what Chris did, and I really like it. The next time you're at Shackamaxon, look in the lobby, the main back door lobby by the pro shop. Chris had an idea, and he presented it in a wonderful way. He called all the Tillinghast courses he could, and he got their flag that they put on the flag stick, and he has them on the wall. So you got Linkwood there, a Best Days block. You got Linkwood, the only Tillinghast course in Ohio. So he's got all these. It's a great display of wonderful Tillinghast golf courses, and it's on the wall in the back lobby. Is that what you call the back lobby?
Yeah, sure. It's right in the golf entrance, right.
Well, that sounds fantastic. I do look forward to coming down soon this year and seeing you guys. We're talking with golf course magnate Chris Schiavone and golf course architect Stephen Kay, New York City's favorite son. And you're listening to Jay's Blaze on the Golf News Net Radio Network. I'm Jay Plummer, and we'll be right back after this.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Blaze on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
At
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers. And Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.